This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're about 20 minutes away from puck drop north of the border, Edmonton and the Florida Panthers. That series even at two games apiece. That's Mark Belusis. I'm Tim Murray. I'm here at the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Got a whole lot going on all across the sports world tonight. We've got Yankees Red Sox at Fenway Park. Bottom of the third inning there. Red Sox a couple of men on as they try to increase their lead facing Carlos Rodon. A sweat as we check the pit stain. Not there yet. LSU and Arkansas. Under nine was the bet that I convinced Mark to make. He will never follow me again if this one does not come home. And right now he's sitting at 3-0.
You were so confident. You were so confident, Tim.
Feeling good.
I was so confident.
Talking about the aces that were going to be on the hill.
And I know.
Already one of them has been pulled from the game. That would be Zach Root, who has been relieved of his duties there for Wu-Pig Sui. So top of the third inning in Omaha, 3-0 right now. LSU with the lead over Arkansas. The third round of the U.S. Open has concluded. Sam Burns heads into tomorrow with the lead at 4-under. He shot a 69 today. Adam Scott shot a 67, as you said, Mark, the ageless Adam Scott, and he shot a 67 today. Justin Ray is just an amazing resource to have when following golf, and he points out, to your point, Mark, at age 44, Adam Scott would be the oldest player to lead/co-lead the U.S. Open entering the final round since Gil Morgan in 1992 at Pebble Beach. He is not going to lead. He has won back, but tells you, though, just where we are with Adam Scott only being one off the lead going into the final round.
Yeah, kind of an afterthought, to be honest with you, sure. When you think about it. I mean, at one point in time, you know, Adam Scott was the world number one. You know, that was 10 years ago. You weren't thinking about Adam Scott for quite some time here. You know, it's really been the Scottie Scheffler show as of late. It's been a lot of the drama with PGA and LIV and, you know, and, you know, you've seen Spieth have a run, Justin Thomas have a run, Bryson DeChambeau go through the line and the litany of players, John Rahm. Scott was kind of an afterthought. I'll tell you, man, he looks great. You know, Timmy, he does. I mean, he doesn't look 44, soon to be 45. You know, he looks like he's about 10, 12 years younger. And he's had himself a first 3 days and put himself into contention. And the knock on Scott when he was in the prime of his career was really the putter. And can he go out there and make enough putts to be able to put himself, you know, over the top and win a major? And we saw him be able to do that down at Augusta and win the Masters. So you look at Scott now, he's put himself into contention. Burns has played well for the and deserved favorite. We'll see exactly, you know, the setup. How difficult the course is. You know that you have to drive it and you got to be on the fairways. You know the greens are very, very fast, very tricky. They had a little bit of rain today and still the greens were very, very fast, very tricky toward the tail end. So I'm sure Sunday is going to be even worse. It's fun to see him in contention, but it's not a star-studded leaderboard, but an intriguing one nonetheless when you've got Burns, J.J. Spawn, Adam Scott, and then you got Victor Hovland 3 shots off the lead.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see when Circa reposts their adjusted odds what the no price will be, because I've got a stat, once again, courtesy of Justin Ray, for Sam Burns, which if you're a Sam Burns backer or family member, I've been told that Live Bet Saturday is a big place for the Burns family to tune to, Mark, every Saturday night as they drive around in their station wagon. Sam Burns, all-time players with a one-shot lead through 54 holes at the U.S. Open are just hitting at a 32% rate. So only 14 of 44 with a one-shot lead through 54 holes at the U.S. Open have ended up winning. Across all majors the last 40 years, players win at a 42% rate with a one-shot lead. And that is what Sam Burns has heading into the final round. He's plus 160. Adam Scott, plus 320. J.J. Spahn, plus 330. And the guy that you are intrigued by, Victor Hovland, sits at plus 650. I know a lot of people, what about Scotty? He's 8 back, 50-1. And if you think he can make a run tomorrow, 2-1 is the price for him to finish top 5. So we'll see what Scotty has in store for tomorrow. So as we continue to see some of the odds percolate for the U.S. Open final round. We will get to those. But, Mark, let's jump to tonight. We've got Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final. We heard from Todd Furman a little less than an hour ago, give us his analysis of what to expect tonight between Edmonton and the Florida Panthers. This series has been as good as advertised, right? Last year, Panthers go up 3-0. Oilers win the final, the next three before Florida wins 2-1 in Game 7. Game 1, you get the comeback from the Oilers. They win in overtime. A late goal in Game 2. Then Brad Marchand scores in double overtime. You had the blowout, the fights, whatnot in Game 3. And then when it looked like the Oilers were dead and buried, down 3-0 after the first period, they score 4 unanswered, win in overtime, and now we've got a 2-2 series back up north, and Edmonton is back as the series favorite, ever so slight, against the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I think, and Tim, you and I are going to disagree a little bit. I know we talked about an hour number one in terms of the first period. We'll get to that momentarily. First off, Stanley Cup playoff hockey is fantastic, and this series has been everything that you could want if you were a hockey fan in terms of the waves of emotion. And I think the intriguing aspect is, you know, do you necessarily, and there has not been a case through the first 3-4 games of this series about momentum. Can Edmonton kind of get momentum coming off of what was an epic, dramatic comeback? Down 3-0, first period against the defending cup champs, on the verge of being down 3-1 in the series, and to rally and to win that game in overtime was just something that will go in Edmonton Oiler lore if they should ever win this Stanley Cup. They still have a ton of work to do. Interesting thing to me when you look at this game is I think you're going to get goals because I think that's just the way the series is. I think you're going to get bad penalties because that's just the way the series
That's definitely how the series has been.
Yeah, because you know what, Tim? Because I think both teams, you know, are able to apply pressure points to their opponent to where you see them, whether it be a delay of game penalty, whether it be a bad stick penalty, whether it be a trip, whatever it might be. You've seen that time and time again. You certainly saw that in game four with Evander Kane, right? So, and the Edmonton Oilers where he got, sent to the fourth line. I think tonight you're going to get goals. I think it's interesting when you look at Pickard, who's now going to be the starting goaltender tonight for the Edmonton Oilers. You know, it's one thing to hop in net as a backup goalie behind Skinner. When you're down 3-0, we've got nothing to lose. We're going to throw you in there and let's see exactly what happens. To now, you're the guy that's starting, you know, game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals against the defending cup champs. Oh, by the way, you're home up in Edmonton. The place is going to be absolutely rocking. What kind of performance do you get from Pickard and Net tonight for the Edmonton Oilers? I think the Panthers they've been the better hockey team. I think the Oilers have more dynamic talent when you look at McDavid and you look at Draisaitl. Both coaches, I think, have been fantastic in this series with some of the changes that they have made. I think you're going to get goals just like you have in the first 4 games of this series. I'd be surprised tonight if this ends up being a low-scoring affair.
Cal Pickard now 7-0 this postseason in net as he replaced Stuart Skinner, as you alluded to. And I don't want to say he's the sole reason, but he made some dynamite saves in Game 4. And look, a lot of it has to do with the contrarian standpoint, you know, going against the market, you know, like you said, going to the roulette table and playing black when it's hit red 4 straight times. But also there's a part of me, too, that thinks we're going to see a better performance from Sergei Bobrovsky. I thought for one of the best goaltenders on the planet, for him to give up 3 unanswered goals in the second period, he had been so fantastic throughout this series here. So I think we get a bit of a better effort. And, I'm going to pound my head against the wall and be a moron. And I took first period under, which is yet to hit. I took full game under, which is yet to hit. Let's go, baby. Bring it on. Come on. Let's go.
No, I get it.
I'm not a Game of Thrones guy. What is it? The Jon Snow when he pulls out the sword and everyone's coming towards him. Is that right? I'm not a Game of Thrones guy. That's me.
Yeah, that was the.
Come on, baby.
That was like, I don't know if I could say what the battle was, but that's the famous battle toward the tail end of Game of Thrones, right? So,
did he survive? Did he survive or did he die?
He did survive. He did. Yeah. Yes, he did survive it. He did survive it, right? That's the famous one with the horses charging and he's holding up his sword. Yeah, no doubt about it. He said famous. I mean, great scene. And I was a huge Game of Thrones guy. So you're preaching to the choir there, Tim. I get it. Like, listen, Pickard's been great. I think there's a little little bit of a difference when you think about everything that is on the line tonight, coming off how great he was when he needed to be great. Because if he wasn't, I mean, Florida probably would have scored, you know, three more goals and won that game going away. He was great when he needed to be, and he got thrown to, you know, to the deep end of the pool. I just think when you look at Florida, they're a better offensive team than they were a year ago. You know, Carter Verhaeghe's been good. Bennett's been great. We know that their power play has been dynamic. Tkachuk, we've talked about his Conn Smythe odds, how they precipitously dropped. You know, he almost had a hat trick in game four. I think Florida's going to bounce back tonight in Edmonton. You know, and I think they're a team that can mentally handle everything that transpired in game four. I think we've seen that. But I think it's going to be another high-scoring affair. I think the Oilers are going to try and ride that momentum early, jump out on top of Florida, and see how Florida responds.
Yeah, it is. Look, Game 3 was a bit of a dud, but you had plenty of fights in it, so if that entertains you. But Games 1, yeah. 2, and 4 all going to overtime. Look, this is a series, and I put it out there on Twitter, and then that's why I love where we work at VSiN, is people care about everything, betting everything. We don't care about dumb narratives. Oh, you know, these teams aren't involved. They're not big markets. Look, NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Final have been off the charts so far, and wildly entertaining, fun to bet. And hopefully we get another classic tonight, and hopefully it's low scoring. That's all I'm asking for. Hey, if we want to go to overtime, 2-2. That's cool with me. That's let's make it there. Speaking of low scoring, hopefully we could keep it this way. I see that Libby Dunn is in attendance there in Omaha, wearing an LSU/Pirates Paul Skeens jersey, so cheering on her
beautiful
alma mater. And 3-0 still the score as we head to the fourth, so maybe some life. All right, top of the fourth inning, we're holding on there. That's Mark Melusis. I'm Tim Murray. Fun night ahead. They're about to drop the puck in Edmonton.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Live Bet Saturday here on a Saturday night. That's Mark Melusis. I'm Tim Murray. We are waiting moments away from puck drop in Edmonton, north of the border, as the Oilers take on the Florida Panthers. You know, Mark, what I was one of the things that popped up on my timeline today, I'm sure you remember it oh so well, is today the anniversary of the New York Rangers winning the Stanley Cup in 1994?
I believe you're right. Wow. Yes, against the Vancouver Canucks. I was in the building that night.
Were you?
I was at Madison. I was.
What, were you,
dad.
A newborn?
Yeah. No. I was 17, 18 years old when
wow.
I went down. I mean, it's, yeah. So I was lucky enough to be in the building, you know, and, you know, my dad had partial season tickets with buddies of him from work. So we had an opportunity to get finals tickets based on, like, there were four guys in it, right? So we had an opportunity to either pick game one or game seven.
Wow.
And so you want to hear a crazy story? Like, I you know.
We got
so,
4 hours, Mark. Go away, baby. Come on.
Yeah, so I had a, and this is true. God's honest truth. I had a dream that my dad and I, because I'm a huge Ranger fan, love Rangers hockey, right? So I had a dream that we were in attendance when they won the Stanley Cup. So, and we were there for game seven. So I told my dad, I was like, I had a dream. He's like, all right, let's go with it. We'll take game seven, right? And if you remember in that series, the Rangers were up 3-1 in that series. They had a home game.
But they
Madison
lost
Square
game
Garden
one.
Game. Right, they lost game one.
So you would have seen a loser.
I would have seen a loser, right? But they also came back home for a game five lead in that series, had an opportunity to win in five, lost game five, then went back up to Vancouver, lost game six, and then we were in the building for game seven, and they won the Stanley Cup.
And
so it was, I you know, it was one of the, my, I saw my, I, there were so many emotions at the Garden. They broke the 54-year jinx. You know, I saw, you know, people weeping, crying, and just sheer joy and adulation. It was just one of the great moments of my life. It really is. Lucky enough to be in the building that night.
That, I mean, I have not been at a championship clinching game for one of my teams, but there have been some moments. Would you say, I mean, look, are you a Yankee fan as well? So, sir,
Yankee fan,
plenty
yes.
of opportunities over your lifetime to see some big ones, but How would you power rate it? Would that be the most memorable sporting event that you've ever attended?
Yeah, I think it'd probably be at the top. I was at game 6, 96 Ranger, Yankees Braves at the old Yankee Stadium. I was there with my older sister, Kim, that night. So I was lucky enough to be there, and that was the start of the dynasty. The Yankees lost 97 to Cleveland in the playoffs, and then won the World Series 98, 99, 2000, then lost to the Diamondbacks in 2001. So I was lucky enough to be in the building game 6, 96, when the Yankees won the World Series. Rangers 94, Knicks haven't won a title since 73. Grew up a Washington fan from a football perspective.
Really? I didn't know that.
You know, was that... Yes, yeah. You know what? One guy, John Riggins. That's why I became a Washington fan.
He was
pretty good. Diesel getting warm. He was the driving force, and my whole family are all Giant fans. So sometimes, you know, you kind of go against the norm, you know. So everyone's all Giant fans, everyone's all Big Blue, walking around Lawrence Taylor, Phil Sims, all that kind of stuff. So you go against it a little bit. So grew up a Washington fan. But yes, I think being there 94, game 7. At Madison Square Garden, when the Rangers took down the Vancouver Canucks, and Messier and Leach and Keenan, Neil Smith, probably the most memorable night, yeah. Being there as a fan, watching one of your teams that you grew up rooting for finally win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, the Riggo run in the Super Bowl is certainly one that is still talked about to this day.
Against the Dolphins. Yeah.
You heard the horns in the background, the diesel making his way down. You know, it's funny, you know, growing up in that area and being a Redskin fan at the time, you know, I never really saw, I don't remember much of the success, Mark, because I was, I was born in 87. So they did win the Super Bowl in 91, the 91 season, the 92 Super Bowl happened in 92. But, you know, I was a little kid. I don't really remember any of that.
And after that,
it was just this year, to be honest, with the sale of the team from the worst owner in all of sports and the success of Jaden Daniels, their first 11-win season, they had 12, first 11-plus win season since the championship run in 91. So, you know, there's definitely rebirth of that franchise. So we'll see how it all plays out there. But, yeah, for me, growing up in that area, you know, going to it's funny. When the Nationals won the World Series, Mark, they didn't win a home game. They won all four in Houston.
That's right.
So I attended game – I believe it was game 5. They had lost games 3 and 4, and it was a stretch of I'm a big Notre Dame fan. Notre Dame lost by like 30 the night before to Michigan, and then the Nationals lost by like 6 or 7 runs, and essentially I was like, well, World Series is over. They lost to the Astros here. So and then they went to Houston and won 2. So, you know, all is remembered there. But that run, the wild card game against the Milwaukee Brewers, the comeback, the Juan Soto RBI single, then the error in right field, that is probably to this day for me, from a baseball standpoint, probably the most memorable game I'd been a part of. And thankfully in a positive way, because I had terrible memories when I went to game 5 of the NLDS in 2012. The Nats were up 6-0 against the Cardinals and ultimately lost 9-7. And that was none too fond of a memory.
Yeah, well, and you go back and listen, I didn't grow up a Washington fan like you did, Tim, but I was all in favor of the way that the starters were used. I mean, Strasburg basically sacrificed the rest of his career to go win that World Series. I mean, he was unbelievable for the Nationals during that playoff run. Soto with so many big time hits. And that was the year after Bryce Harper left in free agency to the Philadelphia Phillies. And you go out there without Harper, with Soto leading the way. And there was a mix of, you know, who's the third baseman that signed with
Anthony
the Angels?
Rendon.
His name is slipping. Anthony Rendon was fantastic for you guys that year as well. Yeah. So that was a tremendous run. And Strasburg, he made a ton of money in his career, but that was the last real sign. And then he succumbed to a serious arm injury, and you never saw him again. But he, without Strasburg that year, you're not winning that World Series, especially in the playoffs.
No doubt.
Unbelievable.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because Davey Martinez that year, they started 19-31. Everyone was ready to fire Davey Martinez. They didn't. Obviously, they turn around. And now today, Davey, under a little bit of pressure, under a little heat, I should say, after his post-game antics after the Nats lost their seventh straight game, as he essentially said, I'm not blaming the coaches. The players need to be blamed for this losing streak. You're like, oh, all right. So he said, quote, it's not on coaches. It's never on coaching. It's always been on the players. The coaches work their asses off. That was a quote today from Davey Martinez. So seven-game losing streak sometimes gets the best of you, and that is what happened when the Marlins beat the Nats earlier today in D.C.
One, and when you start to see that with Michael Malone in Denver, right? And then what ended up happening, Malone ended up getting fired by the Denver Nuggets, right? So you can't all of a sudden, and he's not wrong in essence what he says, right? He's not wrong. You saw Tom Thibodeau get fired by the New York Knicks because they believe that, you know, they need a different voice. So, you know, maybe the Washington Nationals need a little bit of a different voice here moving forward, but I don't disagree with them. I don't think it's necessarily, we've seen bad managers, we've seen bad coaches where the coaches and the managers are to blame. I don't think that's necessarily the case down in Washington, but that's what happens when you're riding seven-game losing streaks. You know, you're going to get a little frustrated, and we do know this. Davey Martinez is a time where he can get a little emotional.
Oh, yeah.
And he can get a little hot under the collar, and that's what you love about him as well.
No doubt about it. All right, let's update you folks on the Stanley Cup Final. We are underway in Edmonton, scoreless right now between the Panthers and the Oilers. Just underway, though. The puck just dropped, so we will keep our eyes peeled on that. 17 and a half minutes to go in the opening period. Right now, live line shifting towards the under 6.5. Money line just slightly shaded towards the Edmonton Oilers. We're through four innings, Mark. And it's still 3-0. We've calmed things down a little bit in Omaha. The second inning was not great, but our guy Cade Anderson, which was one of the main reasons why we played the under here, courtesy of our guy Jimmy Ott down at ESPN Baton Rouge, he's doing what guys, elite prospects do. So 3-0, LSU with the lead, and we're trying to calm things down a little bit. Not a great start, but right now we'll get you the live line, but we're, you know, as Matt Eumanns likes to tell me every weeknight on VSiN Primetime, there's nothing worse than hope. We've got a little bit of hope here in Omaha.
We've got some hope.
A little bit of
hope. Yeah, it was a leaky ship. It was a leaky ship early. There's no doubt about it. We took on water. But you know what? We've steadied it out a little bit. It's still 3-0. We're through four. Just keep on clicking away those outs. Keep it at, I don't care who wins the side. Just give me the under.
Yeah. A quick update. The Diamondbacks have tagged the Padres for a couple of runs. They lead 3-1. That one in the fifth. So the Diamondbacks, who are still the betting favorite, now mount out to a -521 favorite. Hey, folks, Edge Boost is the first ever bank account built for bettors, ensuring all gambling transactions are approved. No usage fees, no minimums. Earn cashback rewards, 100% approval for all betting deposits. Sign up today at edgeboost.bet. The promo code is LIVE, L-I-V-E. Deposit $25 and Edge Boost will match that deposit. Edgeboost.bet.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Keep it rolling here on a Saturday night. I'm Tim Murray. That's Mark Malusis. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark, M-A-R-C, M-A-L-U-S-I-S. I'm at 1 Tim Murray. Scoreless 6 minutes in to Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final. Edmonton and the Florida Panthers. That series even at 2-game apiece. College World Series tonight, LSU and Arkansas. 3-0 LSU leading Arkansas. They were able to get the best of Arkansas ace Zach Root as he was removed there in the second inning. No runs since the second inning, and that's the way we like it. Let's keep it that way as we both have the under in this one, LSU and Arkansas. Major League Baseball going on right now. The rivalry that, as Mark said, and he would know living there in New York, that not as strong as it once was. Red Sox right now lead it 2-0. Yeah, Mark, if you walk down the street now with a Red Sox fan, are you going to get spit on a Red Sox hat as much as you probably would have in the early 2000s?
No, not even close. Well, and plus, I mean, Tim, the other thing, and I get wearing these alternate jerseys, it's Yankees Sox. Do I need to see the Boston Red Sox wearing, you know, canary yellow jerseys with blue baby blue hats? I mean, this is Yankees Sox on a Saturday night, you know, on Fox. I mean, can we just go with the old school? You know, I get you're trying to make money, print money, but still, I mean, the uniforms are ugly. But no, it's not the same. Listen, after the Red Sox came back from 3-0 down in that series and then finally won a World Series, and it was, you know, Schilling and Pedro and Johnny Damon and everything that David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez, every, you know, that group and those personalities that he had in Boston, it's never been the same. I mean, it really hasn't. You know, Boston's had a lot of success. They've won multiple World Series. You know, Yankees haven't won a title since 2009. It's always going to be there, but I don't think it's necessarily the same that it was in the early 2000s. I don't even think it's particularly close. I think right now the bigger Yankee rival is in their own city. I think it's Yankees Mets because of Soto leaving in free agency, signing $765 million, new sheriff in town with Steve Cohen, spending the kind of money that he's spending. You know, they're averaging 35 to 38,000. Not saying that longtime Yankee fans are now all of a sudden become Met fans, but I think that puts the fear of God into Yankee fans that, you know, it's not the Yankees and everybody else, especially in their own city, with the way that the Mets go out there and conduct their business.
All right, I have a question to ask you. I'm going to do that here in just a second. But let me just update you, folks. Got a media timeout under 14 minutes to go in the first period. Scoreless, Panthers and Oilers. Total sits now at 5.5. It is juiced over at minus 120. And the Oilers, a slight favorite on the money line at $1.25. Those odds courtesy of DraftKings. All right. This whole Soto versus the Yankees thing, is this a situation where Yankee fans, and I'm gonna do another great comparison. You know, we've already compared the Arkansas LSU game to my wedding. So, is this the
which was awesome?
Is this a situation where the Yankees look? They're the hot girl, right? They always got every date they've ever wanted, and for the first time in their lives, somebody said, "Nah, we're good. We're gonna go date that person." You're like, wait, what? No. That doesn't happen here. Like, I get it. Fans are fans, and that happens. And like we already talked about DC fans, and you know, oh, we were so upset when Bryce Harper left. Well, he got offered a bad deal. He went to the Philadelphia Phillies, got a 13-year deal. Of course, he's gonna take that. I didn't really understand the vitriol. Juan Soto wasn't a Yankee farmhand. He was awesome in the season he played there. He was traded there. It was kind of bizarre to me that they just sent so much venom. And was it mainly because he spurned them, and he spurned them for the Mets?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt. I mean, like if Juan Soto signed with the Toronto Blue Jays, I don't think there would be nearly the vitriol it was that he left the Yankees for the Mets. Because I think if you didn't grow up in New York, from the national perspective, is maybe it's hard to have the understanding. Like the Mets for the Yankee fan are like the redheaded stepchild, right? They haven't won a World Series since 86. You know, when Fred Wilpon, Jeff Wilpon, Saul Katz were owning the team, they didn't spend like a major market team. You know, it was always concerns about payroll and all this other nonsense. And I think for the Yankee fan, they watched Soto and the Yankee fan fell in love with him and looked at Soto and Judge as being this remarkable 1-2 combination in that lineup and say, wait a second, we offered you $760 million and still that is not enough. Like, and still you're going to go out there and sign for a little bit more money. And listen, $5 million is not little. It's a significant amount of money. But for the Yankee fan, they're going to say, why wouldn't you give us a little bit of a discount? And I think the Yankees entered in negotiations with the Mets or into those free agency negotiations where the Mets were never going to lose that offer if Soto had no emotional draw to the Yankees. And I'll tell you know, Tim, I was in the locker room when the Yankees got eliminated by the Dodgers, right? Watching Shohei Ohtani run around the Dodgers clubhouse, you know, spraying everybody's shirt, you know, as he's shirtless with champagne and the Dodgers celebrating. You know, you walk down the hall, you go to the Yankees clubhouse, and there was Juan Soto at like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning for the better part of 45 minutes talking about the fact that he's open to talking to each and every team. You know, the Yankee hat turned backwards, and that, there's no hometown discount, none of that. So the Yankee fan was bothered because they fell in love with the player, and they could never really encapsulate the idea that a guy that got offered the kind of money that he got offered would ever leave the Yankees to go sign with the Mets. And then you rub a little salt in the wounds when Soto gets introduced out at Citi Field, calls it a Mets town, talks about that the Mets are in better position to win. All the stuff that you got into it just adds to it as well. And, you know, you've seen him struggle this year. He's been a little bit better as of late. for the New York Mets. He's a wonderful offensive player. You know that. I mean, you grew up rooting for the Nats.
Oh, yeah.
You saw him win that World Series, help you win. You saw his brilliance last year with the Yankees, and I think, you know, it gets the 15 years by hook or by crook. At some point in time, the Soto that is a remarkable offensive player will show himself in Queens.
You know, it's funny because, you know, being a Nats fan, and obviously they're not competing for NL East crowns anymore. They were for the better part of last decade, right? And it started off as really a Braves-Nats rivalry. And then the Mets kind of got involved, right, with the Harvey years, and they made that run to the World Series. And, you know, everyone out there was saying, oh, see, the Mets didn't shut down Harvey, and they got to the World Series. Well, yeah, those takes quickly cooled, right, as his career was derailed. But I always joke because the Mets always seem to just kind of met, right? They trip and fall on their face, and I'm sure a lot of Yankee fans enjoy that. Where are you on this Mets team, right? They're the best team in the NL East right now.
I think they're great.
Yeah, I mean, they look pretty darn good, right, Mark?
I mean, yeah, Tim, I think they're going to get better. You know, they're going to get Manaea and Frankie Montas into that starting rotation. It's really been the thing that surprised me this year about Tim is that when you've looked at this Met team is that it's not been the lineup that has been the driving force. Listen, Alonso has thrown himself into the MVP consideration in the National League for the year that he's had.
Which is, by the way, can I just jump in real quick? That's so wild. I mean, think about two things last year, right? You had, as we get our first goal, as the Florida Panthers strike first, they have beaten Cal Pickard, and now the perspiration starts for the first period under as the Florida Panthers score the first goal of the game, 10:48 to go in that first period off of a draw there. So I'll get you the goal score. But what I wanted to go back to is think about where we were last deadline where you had
– it was Marchand.
You had Brad Marchand again. Another goal for Brad Marchand, man. This dude is having
beautiful goal.
Yeah, he is. He just beat everybody and lifts it right over the outstretched glove hand of Cal Pickard. Very beautiful goal from Brad Marchand. So the Florida Panthers strike first north of the border there. But what I was going to say is when you think about last year around the deadline, the two of the biggest storylines was, will Pete Alonso be traded and will Tarik Skubal be traded? Well, neither were, and both. Skubal might win a second straight Cy Young in Detroit, and they're the best team in the American League, at least from a record standpoint. And then you get the polar bear who hits the big home run against the Brewers, and now, as you mentioned, he's having a career year with the Mets. It's just kind of funny to think back to 11 months ago and where we were in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, but no doubt, 100%. And you look at where Alonso is now. But think about this, Tim. If you go back to June 1st a year ago, all the way up until now, who has the best record in Major League Baseball? It's the Mets. I mean, and you know, because last year at this time, at the end of May, they were 11 games under 500. Then they went on an unbelievable run. And as you look at their current World Series odds, they're sitting there at 7-1. Listen, you get the Yankees; they're a public team. They're 5-1. You look at the Detroit Tigers, plus 750. Those are only the two teams of quality when you're looking at the complexion of the American League. Like, the Mets are going to get stronger; their rotation will get better. And I guarantee you this: knowing the aggressive nature of the owner, Steve Cohen, and obviously David Stearns, I couldn't guarantee you that Pete Alonso is going to be with the Mets long term, because I think he'll opt out after the 2-year deal that he signed. He's got an opt out after year number one. The Mets are going to be super aggressive at the MLB trade deadline to try and win a World Series for the first time since 86.
That's Mark Melusis. I'm Tim Murray. 5 innings in the books out in Omaha. LSU leads 3-0. We've got a goal in Edmonton, and it's Brad Marchand. Another goal for the ageless Brad Marchand. 1-0 Panthers with the lead, and your live line right now as we hit a break here on Live Bet Saturday, Panthers -188 to knock off the Edmonton Oilers.
This is Live Bet Saturday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
I'm a sucker for a good pick over at first base. Solid pick by the Arkansas first baseman. Keep it at 3-0. Top of the sixth inning there in Omaha. That's Mark Melusis. I'm Tim Murray. I convinced Mark on a play. And, you know, it's funny. It's one thing, Mark, to lose a bet because it happens all the time. But it's another thing when, you know, you run into a stranger at the farmer's market. Hey, big fan of VSiN. and you're like, what's a play that you got? And then you just find yourself fixated on that game. And I feel that way with you tonight. I'm like, I got to get Mark home on this one. You know, forget everyone else listening. It's you. I need you to trust me.
I appreciate that.
And we need to get this one home. 3-0, top of the sixth inning. The other sweat that Mark did not tail me on, and which looks like it was a smart decision by him not to do so, 1-0, Brad Marchand has already scored for the Florida Panthers, and you were talking about it. We both watched the replay a couple of times during the break. That was as pretty as it gets, man. 37 years young, Brad Marchand, his fifth goal of the Stanley Cup Final.
No, he's been great. And coming off the draw, splits both defensemen and then beats Pickard glove side just over his left shoulder. I mean, that's a goal scorer's goal. I mean, just a thing of beauty. And he does not look – he's not skating tonight like he's 37. Give Florida credit. You know, they answered the call after what was a stunning, you know, game four loss where they led that game 3-0 down. They've been controlling the play here from what we've been able to watch early on. They lead the game 1-0. Doesn't necessarily mean that's the way it's going to play out. We've seen a lot of emotional roller coaster twists and turns so far through the first four games of this series. But if you thought Florida was going to take an emotional hit after blowing a 3-0 lead in game four, well, tonight in game one and game five in the first period, they've answered it. But it's amazing when you brought up the fact of we're on Arkansas and LSU, the under. You know, I grew up going to the racetrack, Tim, right? I'm a big ponies guy, right? So whenever you go to the track and with all my buddies and they like thoroughbred racing, but they don't follow it on a day in, day out basis or don't necessarily know how to read the racing form. The worst thing you can do, and I'm not one where like there are guys where you go to the track and they're like, oh, who do you like? And they don't want to tell you. Right. And they're or they don't want to tell you their picks or they, you know, they keep or they'll tell you after the race is final. Like I had it. I had the exacta. I had the trifecta, whatever it might be. It'd be like, hey, why don't you pass the knowledge along a little bit? Right. So but to play along to your point, anytime I tell one of my buddies like, hey, I like, you know, I like this race coming up and I like a particular horse. There's an unbelievable incremental amount more of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Besides the amount of money that you bet on that race for that horse to run well. Because if that horse doesn't run well, you get the eye rolls, you get nice pick, you get your chops broken for the next 25 minutes. There's the pressure that comes along with, and I don't mind giving out picks, but I tell you, listen, it's horse racing. Anything can happen, right? We're betting on animals. You know, you never know what's going to happen during the course of a race, right? So here's what it comes down to. So, but the, whenever you give out a pick, you no doubt feel a little bit more pressure. So now that pressure's on you tonight with Arkansas and LSU.
All on, yeah, it's all on me. We're still 3-0 there. Under 5 minutes to go, still 1-0. There is nothing like a first period under sweat. It is exhilarating as I try to spit out the words there. You know, it's funny. I remember before I moved out here, I was working at NBC Sports Washington. And I was doing a TV show there. And I was probably, you know, we all have stretches in our lives, whether it be whatever sport it would be. And I was just on a ridiculous heater for college football that particular year. And I remember I was sitting at my desk and one of the hosts walks in and looks at me and goes, hey, good pick on Penn State, you know, tongue in cheek. I'm like, what? I was like, dude, I went 3-2, man. You can't just cherry pick one game and tell me, you know, like if you're going to roll with me, you got to play all the damn games. Like if I went 1-4, that's fine. But yeah, it's always funny. It's hard to be a people pleaser. We're trying to do that here tonight. 4:16 to go. First period. It is 1-0. Want to give a shout out to VSiN host and tremendous play by play broadcaster, Ben Wilson, who right now, Mark, you and I are in Ben's headset as he gets ready to call the Vegas Night Hawk game as we are airing locally on 12:30 The Game here in Las Vegas. So shouts to Ben, who is the next rising superstar in the play-by-play world out there, one of our own hosts. Once again, quick update from Omaha, bottom of the sixth inning, 3-0 the score, LSU leading Arkansas. Cade Anderson has been as good as advertised, so hopefully that continues. So far in the College World Series, albeit a very small sample size, Mark. It is two unders, one over in the three games that have played so far out there in Omaha. So we will see. Hopefully, it is three unders as we head into tomorrow's action out there. Yeah. Have you, Mark, when was the last time you had a Jell-O shot?
You know what? When we were talking about Rocco, it's been a while. I have to go back to. It's been a while. You know, when
it's
you
not
have
a,
kids.
It's not a day to day occurrence when you go in for your Sunday shift at the fan. No, it's not.
No. Like I was telling you before we started the show tonight. Like this afternoon, I took my wife and I took our kids to go see Lilo and Stitch. So that we're a far away from doing, you know, that's where you're getting the popcorn, you know, get some Mike and Ike's, you know, what do I go with? You know, do I drink the water, get myself a fountain soda, whatever it might be. We're a long way away. I'd have to go back to my Syracuse days, you know, when I was up at school.
I mean, it was cold. You probably had to drink yourself to warm up, you know?
No doubt. I mean, and nothing stopped though in Syracuse. Like here in the, I live in New York. I live in lower, you know, in the tri-state area. Like you get like 6 inches of snow, like everything shuts down. Up in Syracuse, they could get like 18 inches of snow. Nothing shuts down. Like the city just runs as it is accustomed. Like they're just so used to it. But I have to go back. I lived in a house on Euclid when I was at Syracuse. We called it the attic and we used to throw house parties. I lived with 7 other guys. And of course, like there were times where you'd make jello shots and stuff like that. But I'd have to go back a good like 20, 25 years to where I was having jello shots.
Yeah. The last update of the Rocco's jello shot board had the LSU Tiger faithful with 8,800 already. And folks, we got a long ways to go before a champion is crowned. What is not great is that Arkansas is on the board. They just hit a solo shot off of Cade Anderson
3-1.
In the bottom of the sixth. So 3-1, still okay. We're sweating this one out as Edmonton is on a power play, though. So now we've got 5-on-4 hockey. So the first period under very much in the peril right now. Let me ask you this real quickly, because I 3-0 Red Sox.
Well, when was the last time? Well, Tim, you have to answer the question. You asked me. It's been a long time. When was the last time you've had a jello shot?
Let's see. I graduated college 16 years ago. So what? 16 days ago, probably took a jello shot, you know, in the neighborhood. I would say I definitely have had some post-college, but I would say my son is almost 8. I don't know if I've had a jello shot since he's been alive. So I'd say we'd be going on almost 10 years. So I would say that's a fair guess there. I feel like at some wedding, I feel like I've probably taken a jello shot at some point. But I wanted to circle back to this. We got updates. We'll give you these. 3-0 Red Sox leading the Yankees, top of the sixth inning.
Yeah.
Once again, 3-1 LSU in Arkansas. The sweat is on in the final 3 minutes for my first period under as Brad Marchand scored the only goal so far. And hopefully it stays that way here in this first period. But what time did you go to the movies today? Because I went to a movie at 10 a.m. this morning, and my family was one of 5 total people in the movie theaters to watch the How to Train Your Dragon. That was the, I would say, the least attended movie I've ever witnessed in my life.
Yeah, we went to 1:45 Eastern time. So it would be 10:45 your time. So 1:40, and the theater was packed.
Okay.
The theater was absolutely packed, and I made the bad decision. I didn't buy tickets beforehand.
Ooh, yeah.
So we were separated a little bit. So it was 5 of us, 2 in one row, 2 in another row, and my wife sat solo in 3 concurrent rows. But we didn't have to sit in the front row. That was the most important thing. But the theater was mobbed. I got to be honest with you. And Lilo and Stitch in the end, Tim, I'm an emotional guy, was a little bit of a tearjerker in the end. Was a little bit of a tearjerker. It really was. Tears were flowing a little bit of emotions. I get into it with the theater. Like, I wasn't expecting it with Lilo and Stitch, and that's exactly what I got right around when that movie ended, right around 4:10, 4:20 Eastern time. There were some waterworks.
Well, there's going to be some waterworks here on the set because the Florida Panthers have just scored. And that is now 5 straight games, ladies and gentlemen. The first period over has hit, and I'm the moron who took the plus money on the under. So the Florida Panthers make it 2-0 as they get the goal. They kill the power play, and now they have just taken a 2-0 lead. And Sam Bennett, who was the favorite to win the Conn Smythe coming into today, I would imagine he has helped out his cause as off of a Tkachuk rebound, Bennett beats Cal Pickard. And just like that, the Florida Panthers lead 2-0. And the first period over cashes again. 5 2-0 for the first period over. Panthers lead 2-0 in game 5 north of the border, and they are now out to a -$5 favorite. That's Mark Melusis. I'm Tim Murray. It is VSiN Live Bet Saturday.